Good morning, honorable members. Good morning to the National Treasury. Dr. Bletcher, I take it you are the only one here this morning, am I right?
I think so, yes.
Yeah, no, that's fine. Thank you very much. Thanks for coming. And good morning to Professor Plati and your delegation, FFC delegation. I always, because of the FF, the FF always, you know, men must think correct. Thank you very much, and thank you very much for coming. Well, today we are here to receive a briefing from FFC. Well, it is a briefing on the 2018 appropriation bill. We regard FFC as our key stakeholder who always come and give us their analysis, deep analysis of the appropriation bill. For instance, in this case, it will be the 2018 appropriation bill. An analysis that is aimed at empowering members to gain deeper insights on the appropriation bill. The objectives of the appropriation bill and whether the appropriation bill has been fairly allocated to departments, aligning to the government priorities which flow from the NDP priorities. The FFC indeed has always assisted the committee in ensuring that the allocated funds go to where they are most needed. It is a difficult task for which the Financial and Fiscal Commission, as an important and valued partner to the Appropriations Committee, will help the committee so that we approve a budget that is transformative, that promotes the equitable redistribution of resources and directs scarce resources towards catalytic investments in human and physical capital. So I invite you to listen carefully, and members will be given an opportunity to interrogate or to rise on clarity-seeking questions. And I want to believe that in our engagement, we will also be able to craft on best quality recommendations that will be in the best interests of the country, in as far as the allocations are concerned and the actual implementation of the budget is concerned, so that indeed at the end we receive quality service delivery to our people and we achieve quality and a better life for all. With these few words, I would once again like to welcome FFC, and please be open and free, and we welcome innovative ideas for effective budget allocation. Looking forward to a fruitful and robust engagement. Thank you very much. We will then move on to item number 3, which is Oh, sorry, two witches apologies. Are there any apologies?
Good morning, Chairperson, honorable members and guests. We received three apologies for today's meeting. The first one is from Mr. Sheikh Imam. He is attending the Pan-African Parliament. Mr. McLaughlin is attending the Standing Committee on Auditor General. And then Ms. Shoppe Sitole is not feeling well. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you for the apologies, honorable members. Do you accept the apologies? Apologies accepted. Shall we then proceed to the next item, which is presentation by the Financial and Fiscal Commission. Over to you, Prof.
Thank you, Chairperson. Good morning, honorable members, and all the visitors here tonight, today. Chair, I just want to confirm that as part of the record for presentation that we've sent you also a narrative report, which is an interpretation of the matters that we have given you based on your request, and we also send you the slide presentations. So today we'll just concentrate on the slide presentations, but if there's questions that relates to the full narrative, please feel free, honorable members, to ask questions about that. Chairperson, we're presenting this report to you, as I said, based on a letter, but more importantly, based on the money bills, but also the Financial and Fiscal Act of 1996. Our presentation today covers, as per your request, the economic outlook, investment and job creation, revisions and additions contained in the 2018 appropriation bill, baseline changes across the votes and risks to the fiscal framework. We're also looking at the effect of the government's five priority areas in terms of the medium-term strategic framework, infrastructure investments in by national government, and the challenges and opportunities which faces our state-owned companies funded through the 2018 appropriation bill. And then we're looking at the new existing institutional arrangements, policy areas, or mechanisms that can stimulate further cost efficiencies within the system. So I'm going to hand over to Dr. Ramos Mabugu, who is the lead researcher that's with me. But before I go any further, I forgot to introduce the team that's with me. I'm sorry. It's either aging or the after effects of being sick. On the far left is Henry Extien, who's a parliamentary advisor, parliamentary liaison officer. Next to him is Dr. Mabugu, who's our research director. Behind him is Sasa Peters. And then next to Sasa is Popin Taka and Tando Ngozo. All of them are part of our research team. Can I hand over to Dr. Ramos to take us through, and then I'll come back to you on the other side of his presentation to do the conclusion.
Thank you, Prof. Over to Dr. Mabugu.
thank you, and once again, good morning, honorable members and Chair. Now, I'll start with the economic overview, investment and job creation. And the main point for 2017, which is the final full year that we've got a full figure, says to start by saying the economic outlook, business and consumer confidence have improved dramatically in the recent past. So much so that our main forecasting agencies led by the South African Reserve Bank are now looking at economic growth to accelerate, averaging 1.7% in 2018, then moving to 1.5% for 2019 before getting to 2% in 2020. So at the end of the medium term, the expenditure framework, the forecast is that will be at a 2% economic growth rate. For the 2017 full financial year, again, growth exceeded expectations. We landed up with a final growth rate of 1.3%, which was an increase over an upward revised 0.6% economic growth in 2016. And part of the main drivers for the economic growth for 2017, could be found in agriculture and mining. Those were the two main drivers that we saw propping up economic growth. At one stage, we thought we may sink into a recession during 2017. But agriculture and mining, because of improving weather conditions, particularly in the northeastern regions of the country, managed to prop us out of a recession. And once again, to demystify terms, the difference between a recession and a depression is very straightforward. When you see your neighbor out of a job, that's a recession. But when you are also out of a job, that's a depression. In other words, the whole economy is now depressed, not just parts of the economy. So that's the technical and easy way to understand magnitude of a depression as opposed to a recession. When it's a recession, it's still affecting other parts of the economy or your neighbor. When it gets into your own house, you're now in a depression, and we haven't gotten yet that we're threatened by a technical recession, but that didn't materialize. The next figure just plots in terms of the figures, the revised versus the previous expectations on economic growth, with your blue rectangles there being the previous and your orange being the revised expectations. And as you can see, throughout the quarters, there has been an improvement in terms of revised economic growth rates that we have seen, again, lending that improvement in sentiment, as well as the pump priming of the economy from agriculture and mining that has been taking place in the recent past. Again, when we take investment, we see that there is a substantial rebounding compared to previous years. In fact, it went up 4.1% contraction in 2016, and we saw a marginal improvement of 0.4% in 2017, coming from that deep fall. And when we track a number of indices, we see that there's improved business confidence across most of the indices. And here we just pick on the South African Chamber of Commerce and Industry Index that picks up on the nature of what the indices around business confidence are saying. So to summarize that debate, we are seeing improved business confidence across the board, signaling that there are more optimistic expectations. For now, the actual conditions have not yet materialized or reflected the expectations, although for 2018, the expectation is that with such positive sentiment, there will be improved investor sentiment leading to higher investment in 2018. Now, looking at employment, this has remained sluggish despite the improved sentiment in business confidence and economic growth. We see that the number of people employed decreased by 21,000 from the third to the fourth quarter of 2017, but when you look at the full year for 2017, employment actually increased by 102,000 new jobs for the full year. So year on year, growth rate decelerated substantially from 2.3% in the third quarter of 2017 to 0.6% in the fourth quarter. So as you can see, there is a sluggishness in translating the growth prospects into jobs there. Now, disaggregating the labor market, we see that skilled employment grew the fastest at 2.8% in 2017. In other words, ahead of economic growth. And this was followed by semi-skilled employment that grew at 2.7%. Unskilled jobs grew below the economic growth rate, coming in at 1.8% for the year. So again, this reflects the debate that we've been having over the years of a mismatch between an economy which is demanding skills and a labor force that is unable to respond with agility to such demand from the economy that's looking for skills as opposed to low skills. And now in section three of the narrative and in the presentation, we look at baseline changes and service delivery implications in the 2018 appropriation bill. And the main thing that will be illustrated by the figure that will come is we are seeing that government has reduced the overall baseline to national votes by 0.5% in the 2018 appropriation bill. And this is below the annual growth rate of 1.5% that we had been forecasting for 2018. So in terms of consolidation, you can see that dramatic breaks on overall increases in baseline. Instead of 1.5% growth across the baselines, we're seeing only 0.5%. Now, the strategy of reducing a real appropriation implies that service delivery will likely be affected from national departments unless if we see active steps being taken to improve operational efficiencies and service delivery innovations. In the past, we could argue that because appropriations are going up, even without substantial innovation, service delivery could potentially increase from the muscle of appropriations, but now we don't have that buffer from rising appropriations. So now is the time to really put the pressure on innovations and improving operational efficiencies, particularly for national departments, because we're seeing the reduced growth rates in allocations. Taking a selection of the votes, and here I can just draw attention of members that in the narrative, we do a budget analysis of all the votes, and that is the table that is reported in your Appendix 1. So if you want to see the picture for all the votes, the extended budget analysis is in Appendix 1. Here we just select the main highlights in the presentation. So we see that higher education growing at 12%, economic development 9%, and health at 3% reflect the fastest growth on average per annum over the period 2015-16 to 2017-18. And those growth rates in those three selected votes, your higher education, economic development, and health, are actually the trends that were established in the previous appropriation acts that were passed. So there are no major changes. Those are maintained. But for agriculture, forestry and fisheries, rural development and land reform, and human settlements, we see those decelerating by 3% for each over the 2015-16 to 2017-18 period. And the negative growth rates do worry the Commission, especially to the extent that these votes play a key role in socioeconomic development in rural areas. And if you recall, 2 years ago, we ran with our annual submission around interventions for rural development, and it was particularly these three votes that play quite a substantial role in rural development. So there is a lot of interventions and actions required to ensure that we don't take a back step on rural development on the trend that we had set from 2 years back. This slide, in terms of analysis, points to what I've just been saying around the baseline changes of the key national votes. You can see at the bottom there that overall the 2018-19 appropriations, we are registering a negative 0.5%, driven very much by basic education, energy, human settlements. And on the last column there, the ones that we've circled in green are the ones that I was referring to that have maintained the trends that were established in the previous appropriation X. So the red there is indicating areas for a closer focus for members, and the green is saying this is in line with the X that we have passed. Continuing with a bit of description on the table, we see key service delivery areas such as energy, human settlements, and basic education being targeted for major reductions. In fact, for energy is minus 19% over the 2015-16 to 2018-19 period. And what needs to be noted here is the reductions within those national votes are not just targeting non-core spending this time, such as administration, but they're also targeting direct service delivery areas. For example, solar energy, housing, and education infrastructure, which are frontline service delivery areas, are also being targeted for the reductions, which is quite a departure from how we used to be doing consolidation exercises. So this is now going to even cutting the actual bone itself rather than the meat around the bone, which is a big nuance to the consolidation as we have known it in the past. As we mentioned when we made our submission on the accompanying Division of Revenue Bill, there's concern from the Commission about the disproportionate cut to infrastructure grants. In particular, cutting infrastructure grants without a detailed performance and effectiveness review of such grants has the potential to reinforce a widespread historical disparities that these grants were intended to address in the first place. And if you will recall our discussion around the Division of Revenue Bill, one of our main recommendations there was that we should also require an assessment criteria for cutting the grants to be provided upfront instead of us digging in through for reasons for the cut that took place, particularly this year. If we can have that analysis and what were the rationale criteria published together with the cuts, then that allows for much better interaction between the committee, its stakeholders, and the executive. And we did call on that. And again, going forward, the commission would like to reiterate the need for rigorous analysis to be undertaken to ascertain the exact impact of such cuts, particularly on households, business, and the economy at large, for the reasons that I've spoken to. Now, the next slide looks at changes to spending outcomes. And now, from our analysis, we see that most votes spent on par or above the national average of 98.2%, but there's unevenness in spending patterns, which is a key feature in most of the votes. Votes which spent below the national average for the period 2014-15 to 2016-17 are energy, which has spent 93.8% on average, basic education 97.6%, whilst police spent the full 100% of its budget 2014-15 to 2016-17. The underspending by the Department of Energy is linked to poor performance of the Integrated National Electricity Program, INEP, while underspending for Department of Basic Education is in relation to delays in implementing school infrastructure projects, which is quite worrying. Total national spending as at February 2018 amounted to 88% of total budget for 2017-18. And if we were to assume that national spending is done on a straight line basis, then benchmark spending as at February 2018 would amount to a national figure of 92%. So departments which fall below where you would expect them to be at the end of February, that is the 92%, are energy, which is sitting at 84.4%, and economic development at 85%, and the other ones are where you would notionally expect them to roughly be. So in terms of a more stringent focus, it would be around what's happening in energy and what's happening in economic development there. And the next table there just puts in terms of numbers the basis for the analytical message that I've just communicated, that those who are below the 92% would be your energy in the main. Now, there are four key risks that are identified in the context of the 2018 appropriation bill. And we group them into water scarcity, public service wage negotiations, financial position of state-owned companies, and threats to sovereign credit rating downgrade. So those are the four main risks that come out of the analysis. And these are not just risks to the appropriation bill, but indeed, these are risks to the fiscus as a whole. Now, the next slide tries to pick how is government directly responded to those four risks in terms of what we see in the proposed appropriation bill. Well, in terms of direct response, we see 91.6 billion rand over the next 3 years allocated to extend, upgrade, and maintain a water resource infrastructure. We see a reduction in the compensation ceiling by 15 billion in 2018-19, likely resulting in national and provincial headcounts falling. So there is that 15 billion reduction in compensation ceiling to respond to the second risk around compensation. On state-owned companies, government has proposed spending cuts amounting to 85 billion over the medium term and marginally reduced the expenditure ceiling to boost investor confidence. There's also been appointment of a new board and acting chief executive officer at Eskom. It has granted South African Airways 10 billion rands to settle its short-term debt obligations and appointed a new board chief executive officer and a restructuring officer at the airline. And in the course of last year, you called us to come and brief you around the 10 billion intervention, and we came and gave the commission viewpoint on the end. If you will recall, our main position on that was that to avoid a spiraling of the call allowing the debt on Eskom to be called, because that would now have cross repercussions and affect other state-owned companies, thereby threatening to derail the whole of the fiscus. That's how we supported that intervention to the 10 billion intervention to ensure that SAA would be able to at least address its creditors during that period without it spreading to other SOCs and eventually to the fiscus. Government has also made a commitment to reduce its guarantees as part of efforts to maintain fiscal prudence. So four main areas of intervention to deal with the risks. And then the next slide says what would be the Financial and Fiscal Commission's observations on those risks and the proposed response, the four areas. The Commission welcomes measures that have been taken to mitigate fiscal risks to the fiscus, and broadly speaking, the potential to improve budget credibility and support fiscal consolidation efforts. With respect to the water crisis, the Commission calls on government to continue to be cognizant of the likely long-term impacts on the economy of the water crisis, and to put in everyone's psyche that South Africa is generally a water-scarce country, and as a result, going forward, we need to be putting in place measures aimed at fostering behavioral change as a way of dealing with the water crisis, not just during the drought period that hits us, but as a way that we conduct ourselves going forward. And for that to happen, it requires interventions that we wish to see. On the public sector wages, again, this continues to be a big a concern, but for now, the Commission's view remains that government and the unions should aim to reach a settlement which supports the current fiscal position, because that would be in the national interest. And we've run some simulations in the narrative that show you the consequences of going beyond certain agreements, wherein at the time of budget 2018, we're looking at for 85 billion to plug the gap. If we go for CPI plus 3, for example, we work out the implication for that, and it comes to some very big figures required in order to plug the gap. So we watch that discussion and negotiation, and it has become of such national interest that there is need for a compromise on the both sides to be dealing with that. On the issues around guarantees, particularly to state-owned companies, the Commission's observation relates essentially around the conversation we started with you last year. And this year is to call on National Treasury to review the guarantee framework, to seriously review the guarantee framework and the processes around it. And again, now is the time to really press on reviewing of that guarantee framework. I think when we came to brief you last time around this particular issue, the response from our colleagues from National Treasury was that from a technical perspective, they were in agreement with a need for reviewing the guarantee framework. And so the Commission continues to call on that process to now take effect, and we see the nature of the review in terms of the guarantee framework and the processes around it, so that we have a reviewed framework that we can use now whenever we are dealing with the issue of guarantees going forward. Now, Section 4 is around progress in achieving medium-term strategic framework goals within the context of the 2018 appropriation bill. And there are four overarching priorities that we are focused on, both in the narrative and in the presentation, around promoting economic growth, job creation, education, and then health. Just going through that quickly, starting with our assessment on economic growth, we have seen that gross domestic product has decelerated from 2.5% in 2013 to 0.6% in 2016 before rising to 1.3% in 2017. So the average between 2013 and 2017, because here we're talking about assessment against the medium-term strategic framework, the average over that period, 2013 to 2017, is 1.5%. So current forecasts, the ones that I spoke about at the beginning, are only seeing economic growth rising to 2% in 2020, which suggests that the figure that we have in the medium-term strategic framework on the gross domestic product target of 5% is unlikely to be met, because we're so far away from there, even based on optimistic expectations that are taking us to 2%. 2013 to 2017, on average, we were growing at 1.5%. 2020, we only expect to be 2%. So the 5% we have there, there is that mismatch. And the trends in economic growth and investment are closely aligned to government consumption spending, which has also decelerated from 3.3% in 2016 to 0.6% in 2017. So one of the main levers that you can expect to pump prime the economy in the short term is not there, and we're not going to get relief from any higher government consumption. What's even worse is that on current trends, by 2020-21, government is expected to spend around 12.2% of available revenue on servicing debt, suggesting that there will be less spending available to boost economic growth, as most of it will be going towards debt service. Now, job creation, the medium-term strategic framework outcome on decent employment is aimed at creating jobs and addressing unemployment. And government has got many interventions that it has proposed in terms of labor market interventions and programs to alleviate, in particular, youth unemployment. These range from training and skill development, promoting entrepreneurship, and providing employment services. But at the bottom of all this, for us to create the large number of jobs required, we need a strong and sustained expansion in economic growth, which then gets coupled with the skills development and innovation measures put in place. Taking a long-term perspective, our unemployment rate has risen from 22.5% in 2008 to 26.7% in the fourth quarter of 2017. So again, at the current rate, the medium-term strategic framework target of reducing unemployment from 25% to 14% in 2020 is unlikely to be met, because we're so far away from the 14% sitting at 12.7% points above where we want to be, and we only have 2 years to get to 2020. So the job creation and economic growth targets, we are lagging way behind. The third area is education. Education targeted because it plays a key role in human development and is a tool for eradication of poverty and reduction in inequality. The main National Development Plan goals revolve around eliminating absolute poverty while reducing inequality. Now, according to medium-term strategic framework, there are a number of initiatives set and targeted to sustain and accelerate improvements in school performance. One of the targets that was set was to ensure that all schools have adequate sanitation, water, and electricity. And this was set for 2017-18. To date, there are schools, as recent news and evidence has shown, which do not have those key infrastructure areas, and is the main reason why the school infrastructure backlog grant has continued in 2018, to realize that we have not fully met on those targets. On ensuring that every grade one learner receives a grade R every year from 2015, that target was also missed, and only 87% of grade one learners had received grade R by 2016-17. Continuing with education, we see that for 2018-19, the period of interest for today, basic education remains one of the priority areas, accounting for 16.5% of total consolidated government expenditure, and expected to be growing at an average annual growth rate of 6.8%. And from the Commission's perspective, while that growth is lower than the 2017 medium-term expenditure framework of 7.3%, we still think, given the tight fiscal constraints, that growth is quite good for basic education, and shows intent within the constrained fiscal environment to continue prioritizing basic education. It's not as much as we were focusing last year, but it still makes an effort to reprioritize towards a basic education. And that's why the Commission thinks it's a welcome way of prioritizing being shown there. And during the 2018 medium-term expenditure framework, basic education will continue to focus on various key strategic interventions, including replacement of inappropriate and unsafe schools, provision of water and sanitation to a number of schools lacking those services, and building new schools and maintaining existing school infrastructure. And those prioritizations reflected in those programs are in line with the medium-term strategic framework. And for that reason, the Commission supports those with respect to post-school education and training, PSET. Expenditure is increased by a whopping 13.7%, but that is largely driven by the additional allocation to NSFAS, the National Student Financial Aid Scheme, for fee-free higher education and training. And the Commission supports those initiatives because they are in line with the current medium-term strategic framework, but it makes two main recommendations to no one's prioritizations shown. With respect to building new schools, that's one of the priority areas. Department of Basic Education needs to take into account special demographic patterns and focus before deciding to build or expand schools, because our research at the Commission has revealed that there is high mobility of learners, both inter and intra-regional. And we don't want a case where new schools get misplaced, because that's a waste of resources. So there's a need to seriously take into account that mobility amongst learners that we are picking up. Around fee-free higher education and training, the Commission made a submission to the Commission, and there it indicated that it is important to maintain fees as part of the mix for funding fee-free higher education, because fees have the advantage that they allow you to take into account issues of equity, the price mechanism, private funding sources, and expenditure side management. In other words, you can differentiate amongst higher education learners according to their different socioeconomic backgrounds through allowing for fees to play a part in the process. And that is a very useful instrument for addressing equity issues, particularly when you're fiscally constrained and don't have sufficient funding to go around. Coming to health, according to the medium-term strategic framework, priorities within the sector include improving access to healthcare facilities, increasing the number of people on antiretroviral medicine, and increased attention to curing tuberculosis. The priority areas for 2018 medium-term expenditure framework include expansion of HIV and AIDS treatment and prevention, expanding access to people with HIV and AIDS to reach 5 million patients by 2019, implementing a national health insurance, and that include phasing in of the NHI. When it comes to treatment of tuberculosis, increasing the number of people screened for tuberculosis annually, reaching 20 million in 2019. Continuing with the health, well, the fastest growing programs within the sector are HIV and AIDS and tuberculosis, because of the implementation of a universal test and treat policy. So quite in line with the priorities set. Now, with respect to progress on the medium-term strategic framework targets, our assessment is that the sector is not far off from achieving its targets. The target that is set for 2019 with respect to individuals on antiretroviral treatment is 5.1 million, and currently we are sitting on 3.9 million. And we still have 2 years to run, 2018 itself and 2019. And if current trajectories continue in 2018-19, and there's no reason to think that they won't continue, because we see that funding has been prioritized to this particular program. We think the 5.1 million is well on target for the sector to meet that. So it's a good tick for that target. With respect to preparation for implementation of NHI, the NHI bill was gazetted for public comments in 2017-18, and it is expected that a revised NHI bill will be submitted to Parliament in 2018, after which the committee may call the Commission to come and give its feedback around that particular area. Now, finally, on infrastructure, which is number five and one of the engines for growth, in a bid to moderate spending within the current environment, we see that budget 2018 proposes significant cuts and deprioritization of infrastructure spending that you see mimicked on that red line on the graph. Again, our state-owned companies at 43% of total public infrastructure are the biggest spenders in public infrastructure. And in addition, real growth in spending between 2017 and 2019 is quite significant at 12.3%. And once again, the concerns that the Commission has around state-owned companies there is prudent spending of the infrastructure funds, and again the need to ensure that the renewed commitment by government to overall performance of state-owned companies will bring about more effective and efficient spending. Coming to the infrastructure grants, and again we've gone through this, it remains that there are instances where it is unclear why cuts have been effected, especially to some grants that were relatively well spent. And again, if the challenge is a non-financial bottleneck, then such ineffective spending, national departments have a duty to assist provincial counterparts with capacity building or technical expertise to improve spending capabilities in line with requirements of the conditional grant in question. So cutting is not the first port of call. Rather, you try to build capacity first, demonstrate that you've tried to build capacity, and only as a last resort do you go to cutting. Again, we reiterate a need for government to design a plan to reprioritize infrastructure funding in the coming years. And the prioritization can cover areas such as what should be cut or delayed, and priority should be afforded to infrastructure related to schools, hospitals, electricity, and water. The line departments also need to be more efficient and should be required to indicate the measures that they are going to take in this regard. In other words, when doing oversight on the national departments, particularly through the appropriation bill, and you ask them what their contribution to fiscal consolidation effort is, it should go beyond just infrastructure projects, but should go more into operational efficiencies of the respective departments. And so that's one new area that the Commission is coming up with, that when you do that oversight for the line departments, also require them to be more efficient and be required to indicate the measures that they're going to take as contribution to consolidation, over and above cutting of infrastructure projects, which is the usual story that we usually get from the line departments. Now, coming to state-owned companies' challenges and opportunities, well, we've pointed out that those remain the biggest and largest drivers to public capital investment. But there are persistent problems that we are all aware of when we have discussed, particularly around ESCOM and SAA. And those protracted governance risks jeopardize fiscal stability as a result of cash injection requirements, contingent liabilities, and higher debt service cost. The figure on the next graph there shows you that while guarantees to state-owned companies have remained flat, what is new there is that exposure has notably increased. And ESCOM continues to pose the greater risk to government's contingent liabilities. And over 62% of the guarantee has been drawn out. And low electricity sales and tariffs pose a threat to its long-run financial viability. And so as a result, there is need for ESCOM and other state-owned companies to look into those internal operational cost structures to drive efficiency, while National Treasury, as we have discussed before, reviews the guarantee framework and the processes around the guarantee framework. A 6-3 just shows the dire picture around financial position of state-owned companies, which has been deteriorating. And you see there on the graph to your right of the picture that net asset value decelerated from 361.8 billion in 2016 to 356.3 billion in 2016-17. And return on equity decelerated from 4.8% to minus 2.9% before it slightly recovered to 0.3% in 2016-17. So again, that reinforces the point that state-owned companies need to generate higher return to equity to ensure increased value and low reliance on debt and transfers. This 6-4 just continues with the point flagging the reason why we need well-managed state-owned enterprises, because they play a crucial developmental role. So the Commission does welcome the measures that have been taken to try and stabilize the state-owned companies over the past year. But those measures need to be complemented by tighter executive and managerial oversight and accountability, with the requirement that our colleagues at National Treasury be required to review the guarantee framework and its processes so that it's a complete package. Chair, you asked us to identify areas where cost efficiencies could be stimulated, and we do say a bit more in the narrative, but here we've just summarized the areas that we propose in one slide. And in the main here, we see that there are many opportunities for creating meaningful and sustainable efficiency savings because of the sheer scale of government operations. And there are four main areas that we flag. Consolidated procurement processes initiated by the Chief Procurement Office is efforts to link public sector wages and productivity, strengthening oversight and accountability institutions, particularly at subnational levels, and inculcating the values of incorruptibility among civil servants and citizens more broadly. We identify two main areas over and above those four: modernization and leveraging on technology. And this goes beyond just buying laptops and computers, but actually using them in day-to-day operations for operational efficiencies and cost reductions. Then minimizing unnecessary outsourcing of services and tasks which can be performed by civil servants. Then the Auditor General report highlights quite a number of areas where work that is outsourced oftentimes is work that could have easily been done in-house. And that information can be pulled from Auditor General reports and really brought to the surface to make those kinds of, stimulate those cost efficiencies. Chair and members, thank you. I'll return the presentation to the Chairperson, Professor Blackies.
Members, what we want to reconfirm with you is that the 2018 appropriation bill definitely tabled an environment of low economic growth, revenue collection underperformance, and you know the whole story around what's going on around SARS and the underperformance there. Politicians have necessitated a reorientation of public finances relative to what was anticipated by the 2017 medium-term budget policy statement. Budget 2018 had to make hard trade-offs to balance achievements of socioeconomic objectives with putting the country onto a solid, more stable financial and fiscal footing. To bring about the balance, a combination of reprioritization, expenditure cuts, and tax policy adjustments have been affected. You know about the VAT, 1% VAT increase. Social Security grants and delivery of basic services are protected from cuts, but spending on public infrastructure, a key economic growth catalyst, bears the brunt of the need to moderate spending on. And we've tabled with some of you that attended the joint meeting what has happened to the conditional grants with the Finance Committee last month. So the Commission welcomes the measures taken to negate fiscal risks to the fiscus, and especially with respect to the water crisis, the Commission calls on the government to be cognizant of the likely long-term impact on the economy, and that South Africa is generally a water-scarce country. But it's quite interesting, over the last 2 weeks of rain in the Western Cape, there's been complaint about water shortages. I mean, it's a matter that's been going on for more than 30, 40 years, 50 years. But you don't see the infrastructure changing. You don't see any intervention that's been made to water harvesting to the extent where they subsidize the different types of tools and equipment given to households, either by the city or by the provincial government. What you see is the scarcity of the water restored, and then, of course, the associated utility prices that increases to the consumers of using it, but we don't see any intervention around water scarcity, especially in areas like the city, if you like. That point I'm making is also obviously going for all the other areas that are affected by water scarcity. There are no interventions really made. Some of us are seeing the same things that's been going on for years. On public sector wages, as mentioned earlier, the Commission's view is that government and unions should aim to reach a settlement that supports government's current fiscal position, as this would be in the national interest. As you know, that if we don't resolve the multi-year, if government doesn't resolve the multi-year salary negotiation settlement, it will continue to create instability in the public service, but also it would have an impact on where we are. Our views have been clear that the higher wages at the executive and senior management level in government needs to be looked at relative to the lower rank, but also relative to the economic growth. The gaps are too huge in those instances. On guarantees to SOEs, or rather state-owned companies, as you know it, the Commission calls on National Treasury to review the guarantee framework and the process. We are aware that there's work being done on it, but I think the more the guarantee framework becomes a open and transparent and has within it the penalties and liabilities shifted to the institution, I think the greater the ability for SOEs to behave according to what a guarantee framework requires from them. Whilst government has managed to protect spending and the social security grants and the delivery of basic services, allocation in respect of basic infrastructure have essentially borne the brunt of the need to moderate spending. We are of the view that the government actively ensures that effects of cuts into infrastructure spending are continuously monitored with a view of ensuring they do not result in the deterioration of current and future service delivery. So by implication, we're also saying that, especially when it comes to those services, education, health, that these cuts need to be monitored in relation to the service priority responding to these communities. And in fact, there might be a silver lining on some of these cuts so that it allows greater innovation on the part of those principal or agent departments that's responsible for the infrastructure to better manage. Our view is that the cuts are not always negative. It allows people to rethink. And we hope that some of the cuts are obviously also allowing people to refocus on waste and leakages within the system. Line departments would be required to indicate the measures that they will take in this regard. I've spoken about that. So the Commission agrees with the thrust of the 2018 appropriation bill. The budget provides evidence of tight balancing act between maintaining social spending but measures to ensure fiscal consolidation. Now is the opportune time to put into practice firm reforms capable of rooting out corruption and identify areas of innovation and cost saving so as to ensure sustainability going forward. The point that Dr. Mabugo made earlier is that it can't be every year becomes a slogan, innovation and cost saving, and innovation and cost savings. We think that Parliament, and in particular this committee, needs to ask departments what are the innovations they are making in terms of service delivery, in terms of spending, but also in terms of managing the remuneration bill downwards. We think that's important, but also in terms of making sure that access happens to especially the poor and the most vulnerable when it comes to education and health. So our view is that there needs to be, we think that just because departments are assured of the budgets are covered in terms of the revenue and the fiscus, that secured income year on and year out doesn't always push harder the issue of innovation and cost savings. And I think there needs to be some other questions asked around the programs of departments to service delivery, to the financing of those services, to see exactly what is the impact that those services are making, and also to look at where are other innovations that needs to happen. If you've delivered service in the same area over the last 20 years, then surely it doesn't speak of innovations in the services. And how technology needs to be used to do these things. Quite importantly is that I read a book the other day that speaks about it's not about time anymore that we spend. It's more about achieving targets. And even those targets, there needs to be other questions asked. Because, and it's just an assessment over the last years of how we've reviewed strategic plans of departments. There's some soft stuff in there. Targets that you don't have to do anything that you will achieve those targets without doing anything. And that's why some of those targets are put to the end of the financial year. There are other harder targets that needs to be asked of departments, especially when it comes to the social spending part. It's because the social spending part is about people, but it's also about that infrastructure. It is about medicine, it is about drugs, it is about textbooks, it is about learning, issues around learning inputs and throughputs and outcomes around that. We think that while there's been a serious fiscal consolidation, we're not yet at the point where it's hard to see whether we're in the phase of austerity measures that's going to take place, but we think this provides this committee and parliament with a golden opportunity to ask the harder questions on innovation, on cost savings, and on issues around efficiencies when it comes to the budget. Thank you, Chairperson and members.
Thank you so much for the presentation. Indeed, it was insightful. I am now going to invite honorable members to interact with this presentation. So, honorable members, the floor is yours. Honorable Member Maswangani, who else want to speak? This one, Honorable Member Manana, Honorable Member Snukwanyane, Honorable Member Gwabaza, in that order. You may start.
Thank you, Chairperson, and welcome the presentation from FFC. Few questions. One, VBS, I would like to get the take from the FFC about VBS. I come from that province, Chairperson, which is hardly affected by VBS story. So I represent the constituents seated here as a member of parliament. Many municipalities in my province, in Limpopo, have invested money in VBS, including the new municipality where I come from, around Malamlele, which has invested 153 million. And I think that's the biggest chunk of their equitable share. How they arrived at investing equitable share, I don't know. I think Treasury and the Reserve Bank, they are looking at that matter. How is this going to affect their next allocation? Because I think the next budget cycle Is it May, June? I'm not very sure. You allocate municipality money to equitable share formula, which I think you contribute a lot in determining that formula. But the municipality decide to take money somewhere, and it doesn't look like that money will come back. And it's already affecting services where I come from. We hardly get services that we're talking about here in terms of infrastructure. So how is that going to affect the next appropriation? As much as in the main year we deal with provincial and national governments, but South Africa is one with three spheres of government. I think that's what is in the preamble. Two, VAT. Government has taken a decision to increase VAT by 1%. Of course, people at large don't accept the increase. How is the decision to increase VAT going to impact on the revenue generation and that impact on the budget in the coming financial year, Chairperson? And then the last, you recommend, amongst others, for the Treasury or government to review, because this is not Treasury decision, it's a cabinet decision to allocate or to salvage an entity which is in trouble. Government review guarantee framework. Is there progress in this regard, or as and when a particular SOC has a problem, then government intervenes? 2 weeks back, we met SAA here. We had this problem. And it doesn't look, they were telling us that they will come out of the woods, whether it's 2021, if I'm not mistaken, Chairperson. I mean, now it's 2018. They were looking for many billions which are going to have a serious impact on education. Because there's no money coming from somewhere else. It's the very same money that must go to education, water, and health. So is there a framework in place, or is a recommendation that the executive should come up with? Because this is very critical, more especially to this committee that I'm serving. Thanks, Chairperson.
Thank you very much for questions. Next. Honorable Member Manana.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Let me also welcome the presentation. My first question is on slide 4. On slide 4, where point 2. Dr. Ross, maybe you can explain to me this 1.7 in 2018, 1.5 in 2019, and 2.0 in 2020. The second issue with regards to the depression and recession. If you can please explain it in more detail so that we could understand it clearly. The issue of the on slide now 7, where we're talking about unskilled jobs, and there is this mismatch. What is the commission recommending to address this? If you can give me 5 questions that I can pose. The next one is with regards to the, it's on slide 8, point 2. Can the Commission unpack this operational inefficiency and services delivery innovative, and what are those? On slide 10, we are talking about the cutting of infrastructure grant without a detailed performance and efficiency. It's point 3. Which grant is the Commission talking about, and if needs be, can it provide us with a list of such grants? I will end there as of now, Chairperson.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chair, and thank you, FFC, for always giving us very useful information. My first question, perhaps, on with regard to the sluggish employment growth, looking at slide number 7, where there's been this downward trend in the growth. I see that it's in the third and the fourth quarters that we experienced the downward trend. And does that mean that during the first two quarters you have had real growth, because we still have a benefited for the year, you have 102,000 for the full year? And what would you perhaps associate this with? What would be the reason for that? And on that same, on that same slide, I think my colleague has spoken to the issue of skills demands versus the labor force that we have. I know we've had this challenge, I don't know for how long, of really not matching the skills with the needs of the country. How huge is this challenge still, because it's been going on for a long time. The other thing is on slide number 8, is it slide number 8, yes, where I want to couple it with slide number 10 with regard to the reductions, particularly with regard to let me just say, in terms of energy, and you let me quote this slide because I've lost it, energy and human settlements, where there is reduction in the allocation, and I know that it's a big challenge. It can't be an easy task to allocate here, but if you also look at the, not on this slide, or the expenditure on infrastructure with regard to human settlements, and just seeing that with regard to energy also, they've underspent. Would you say that maybe it's related to the fact that these people are underspent? Because remember, I think anybody having to do this job, you have to actually do trade-offs and also find targets that you can, when people are doing something wrong, you may want to just go for those people that are not really spending. So just the rationale for that, what your thinking is around the rationale for that. Okay, perhaps for now, because I didn't pass, so now I will stop there and I will ask other questions.
Thank you, Honorable Member Snukwanyane, Honorable Member Gwabaza.
Yeah, thank you, Chairperson. Slide 4, bullet 2. In terms of the South African Reserve Bank projection, a decline in the GDP growth in 2015, what could and then again a rise in 2020. What could be this intervening element that suggests there will be a decline from 1.7 in 2018 down to 1.5 and then again rise to 0.2 in 2020? Is there any explanation for that kind of economic behavior? Perhaps let me link this question with this one. You know, immediately after December 2017, we saw an appreciation of the South African currency compared to the developed countries' currencies. And now we are seeing a slump again. Is there something that we, as a country, have certainly started not doing right, which or the outside forces that impact on our currency, such that it's depreciating again? And what are at the level of trade, are we reaping any, maybe it's too early to say, are we reaping any benefits from that depreciation again? My next question, Chairperson, links to an issue Maswanganyi raised, the VAT. The impact of VAT on department spending on goods and services. I know someone said it's a vicious cycle. VAT was increased in order to finance government spending. Fair enough. But departments must now start purchasing goods and services on an increased VAT. So what is the impact? Perhaps my last one, Chairperson. I noticed that the FFC explains quite nicely the issue of social infrastructure and where are we and where are we heading to. You also reflect on some of the economic infrastructure like energy, water being part of that as well, because it cuts across social and economic infrastructure. But not much is being reflected on with regard to a very important part of economic infrastructure such as roads, rail, ports. Where are we and where are we heading to as part of an attempt to expand our economy and increase employment? Those questions, Chairperson. Thank you very much. Or lastly, just generally, does this budget, this 2018-19 budget, does it refocus us specifically, broadly speaking, to economic growth? I know you have spoken about business confidence, positive business confidence, possible investments coming through. Ourselves as a country, does this budget give impetus to that goal?
Economic
going forward. Thanks.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. My apologies. I've attended another portfolio committee before this one, and I'm sorry that I missed the presentation, but there's three questions, Chairperson. Whether they've looked at the possibilities of a sovereign wealth fund to address economic growth or to help with economic growth, which is very important, and it's a submission that we have made before and intend making going forward as well in terms of addressing the economic development within the country. Then there's two other matters. I see there speaking, there's a note about infrastructure and the maintenance of infrastructure. Now I know, especially being a water scarce country, that if we look at the Cape Town, for example, because of ailing infrastructure, we are limited at, you know, level 6B water restriction, so 50 liters per person per day. But in addition to that, we are losing an equivalent of almost of 100 liters of water per day because of poor and ailing infrastructure. So what accommodation is recommendations are made to municipalities in terms of maintenance? And, you know, already we know that the city of Cape Town is going to write back 2 billion rand to the National Treasury because of unspent funds, because that money has not been budgeted for maintenance, for example. So we are restricted, the money is available, but it can't be, and the need exists in infrastructure maintenance, but the money wasn't budgeted for maintenance, so it has to be sent back to Treasury. So that's the one issue, is that you'll have a lot of municipalities that have unspent funds, but because those unspent funds were not budgeted for in areas where they are needed, it has to be sent back to Treasury. So that's quite a tragedy. And then, of course, the fastest growing program is the HIV AIDS testing program. So which is good that we are spending money on testing and hopefully prevention, but we need to know what is the measures of success of this program. Are we getting a reduction in the number of AIDS cases? And, you know, it's no use we're spending money on testing and with the aim of preventing the spread of the virus, and we don't know what the impact of this investment is as well. And then, of course, the state-owned enterprises. Obviously, this is costing us a lot of money, and, you know, we know about SAA, for example, but we also know about the successes of Telkom, for example, which is actually given money to government based on the fact that it's semi-privatized. So are there recommendations for SAA, for example? You know, and is the Financial and Fiscal Commission also working with the South African Post Office in terms of expanding their capacity to achieve some of the goals we want via SASSA in being the preferred or agency for pension and grant payouts? Those are the key areas. Once we can address the SAA, the effective use of the South African Post Office as an agency, and, you know, we small gains, small wins, and this is what this government needs, is to have the small gains right now, and I think, you know, through this recommendations to government, we could help achieve that. Thank you very much, Chairperson.
And from me, Prof, AXA recently reported to us that only 22% of the targets highlighted in the ANE were achieved, even though 98% of the allocated budget had been spent. This is a major concern for us, and also in your presentation, you have also put emphasis on
us not only focusing on value for money, but also focusing on achieving targets. What can be done to ensure that targets are achieved? How can we assist in ensuring that departments achieve their targets? Right. Again, in your presentation, you raise concerns on incidences of outsourcing and use of consultants in government jobs that could be performed by civil servants. For instance, in June 2017, the Auditor General reported that municipalities spend 3.5 billion on consultancy services. And of this amount, 838 million procured consultants in financial reporting. And in many cases where consultants are appointed, there is no capacity to monitor, report on activities, outputs and deliverables. How can we address this issue? Again, in your presentation, you state that in the absence of additional funding for infrastructure, greater emphasis should be placed on improving the quality of capital stock delivered, maintaining existing stock, and reducing cost overruns on current projects. But also, you putting emphasis on improving efficiency in infrastructure projects. What concrete steps can Parliament take to ensure that this happens? Concrete steps. The last one for now is also you state that the single biggest challenge confronting South Africa now in the context of 2018 appropriation bill is persistently low economic growth. What concrete steps can Parliament take within this 2018 appropriation bill to ensure that growth happens? The role of Parliament in ensuring that this growth happens. We will then hand over to you, Prof, to provide responses to the members' clarity-seeking questions.
Thank you, Chairperson, honourable members. I think these questions are quite important and critical. The problem is not the question. The problem is the issue of time, because we need time to be able to respond very comprehensively in some of this. The staff, the colleagues behind me, with the year also to answer some of the questions, so I will look at a couple of it. I think one of the things that we could have done, we should have done, which you help us now, is that when we went through the joint sitting of your committee, Honourable Chairperson, and Honourable Eunice Karim's committee, they were posed at committee questions asked to us from Honourable Karim, especially around the VAT issue. And we've done a submission on the VAT issue to them, and I think we can share that immediately with you as members of this committee, because it deals with our responses to why the VAT increase after 16-year no intervention around VAT was considered at the time the most appropriate one from our perspective, and the potential consequences of that, but including extending who the VAT actually mostly affects relative to increasing the basket of basic services for the poor. So we could share that with you, but I thought that if there's any explanation further required to that, I'm going to ask Dr. Mabogo to give you some inputs into that. So that's the VAT issue. On the government guarantee framework, there is a government guarantee framework, Honourable Member, for SOEs. The question that we raise is that there needs to be a fast tracking of the review of that framework. Because that framework in itself, in our engagements, or rather in my engagements with the Treasury, at the time when the other minister was around, was that this need to look at how they're going to consult us and others on it. So further details on that, I don't know. But we could probably fast track our engagements with that unit that deals with it to get to know what's going on in it. But that framework sets the test of issues around the value, the risk to the fiscus, the repayment element to it. And there are a couple of other tests, but there is an acknowledgement in the review in terms of my own engagement that there's a need to look at it because it is too open on some aspects of it. On the issue of operational efficiencies, it's a matter that we've been raising for a number of years, that there's too much wastage and leakage in the system. The Chief Procurement Officer tried to intervene on procurement of services on the one hand to deal with that operational efficiency question. There's also issues about why do you have to take five steps to produce something or take you three steps to do it. So it's about that. And there's also decision making within the system that one of the things that we used to discuss in the golden era of the public service, I think, when I was there, is why not give decisions and authority the appropriate level for people to make decisions so that we can actually fast track on delivery. But then there's also been a systematic centralization of certain decision making as a result of a range of things that's been happening in different units. So on where operational efficiency, it's in the schooling system, it's in the healthcare system, it's in the social grant system, that operational efficiency needs to occur. But to get to operational efficiencies, you also need to ensure that you have skilled people. You also need to ensure that you have people that have the ability to make the appropriate decision at the right time. You also need to make sure that you have the currency of consequence in place when people make the wrong decisions, not because of error in it, but because of consciously taking fraudulent and corrupt decisions. So the operational efficiency has got to do with if you want to add value to what we do, what is the quickest way to do certain things, to deliver on certain services within the regulatory framework of the country? That's the key issue here. And if you want us to come back to you on the matters around operational efficiencies and where the inefficiencies occur, we will be glad to do that if you give us sufficient time to do that. The Minister of Health in particular raises four issues which has got to do with, on the one hand, it's got to do with making sure health gets delivered, which we agree with, on HR, on maintenance of buildings and machinery, medical machinery, procurement, and even the whole thing about how staff gets appointed. Now, operational efficiency is in that space that we need to look at. On the cutting of infrastructure grants, I don't think any of the infrastructure grants got missed. All of it were cut. But the staff will give you an idea as to which infra grants are we talking about specifically. But all infrastructure grants. Remember, we had a big hole, a huge hole that needed to be filled. I sometimes say to people when they talk about money, do you know how many, about 9 zeros is? And then you add the other digits. It's a lot of money. So the 58 odd plus billion rand gap needed to be filled as a result of the pressures on the fiscus, but also the first tier free basic higher education. Somebody needed to pay for it. Somebody needed to pay for continuity of services, especially in the social service environment. So our concern around that is, and the Treasury knows about it, and we told them on numerous occasions, you're not telling us what is the criteria that was applied to cut on infrastructure grants. Because our view is, and it's an international view, infrastructure investment spurs economic growth. And you can go in many countries in Africa, in our continent, Rwanda, Ethiopia, you can see the infrastructure grants and investment by the state attracts other forms of investment. Because people want to see first what the state is doing before they do anything else. So that was our only concern. Not the cuts, but what was the criteria applied to cut on these infrastructure grants, especially the ones that's linked to social infrastructure, education, and health. On the possibility of a sovereign wealth fund to look at economic growth, if I haven't answered the other members' questions, I'm leaving it to the staff that heard much more clearly what was asked. No, we haven't looked at that. It's not on our radar screen immediately, but it's clearly one of those things that we're picking up what's going on in the public domain around it. So we haven't looked at that, Honourable Member Paulson, in relation to that. You missed my point where I was talking about, Honourable Member Paulson, on the infrastructure with regard to water. I did mention the same things that you've been saying. In fact, I want to reiterate, it's one of those things that I mean, sometimes we would like to say, why don't you call the cities in? Let's call the city governments in, and for them to talk about the water and the stormwater. I mean, the water is running away. But we've been saying every year there's a water shortage. But you don't see any interventions in terms of infrastructure to ways of water harvesting, to protecting this important natural resource. To the point, what we see is that how the water issue has been used to push up the pricing of utilities to households. And that's a matter of concern within this environment. On the unspent funds back to National Treasury, I think, I don't know about Equitable Share Returns funds from these councils, but I know about conditional grants. If you don't spend your conditional grant, because it's not your money, it's national money, it goes back to the Treasury on that. On the matter of the AXA targets, I assume, Honourable Chair, you were referring to the Auditor General's input. Okay. I think the main thing here is it is a matter of concern if you've spent all your budget, but you've only reached 22% of the target. So the question is, so on what did you spend the other monies on? Where did you spend those monies on? And clearly that's a matter which we haven't focused on, but it speaks to the issue about operational efficiencies on the one hand. On the other hand, on fiscal governance, which has got to do with the whole question of spending and revenue and expenditure management to the leadership at there. In fact, if you've spent 22%, only the reach 22% of your targets relative to your total budget, then surely there's a problem. There's a serious problem, and I would, on behalf of the Finance and Fiscal Commission, say that you probably need to summon those to come and explain, to come under account as to how that is possible at all. And we would be very much interested to see exactly how we'd help with that. Many of the questions, other questions, are related to the whole issue around productivity, productivity and efficiency. And I think we busy last year. We were starting to explore the whole question of productivity within the public sector. And if you invite us, we could come and talk to your committee, Honourable Chairperson, on the whole question of productivity within it. Then this is the matter that of it puzzling me around the SASSA issue. And this is my own opinion. It's not an opinion of the FFC because we haven't explored this. It's only my own opinion because I was one of two people responsible for establishing SASSA. I don't know what has happened over the last 9-10 years, but what I can say to you is that CPS has developed with government funds, has developed a sophisticated payment system. And what puzzles me, when the Constitutional Court ruled that by being in contract with government, you are by extension a government agency delivering social grants. That was the golden opportunity for the Minister of Social Development at the time, or the department, or even SASSA, to have taken over CPS, lock, stock, and barrel, because that was like the for me, when I read that judgment, that was like the facility that the Constitutional Court gave SASSA and the government to take over CPS, not to go into any other contractual arrangement. Because with the post office, it's another contract, it's more money spent, where you could have just taken it over. In fact, the long and the short, you could have just nationalized the system, because it is your system. You've paid for it through contract fees, through the system. Why it wasn't done, I don't know. No, it's not too late. You just need executive authority. What do they call it? I mean, when the SASSA system was built on the basis of government is going to be saved 50 billion rand per year, 5 billion rand per year, and that was in 2009 when I was in that place, 2009-10. Is that right, Mark? 2009-10. Just take over the system. I would have taken over the system and faced the consequences later if I was still there, and just say, now take me to court, and then we'll deal with the matter in court, because the Constitutional Court has ruled by virtue of being, and that should actually serve as one of those things for this committee, Honorable Chairperson and members, that the court says that if you are in contract to deliver a public good, by extension, you are a government agency. That says a lot. That says a lot. You can take all those things that government has funded in terms of building intellectual property, to building the system of delivery, to everything that's got to do with the delivery agent on behalf of the principal, which can take over. I mean, the Constitutional Court was like, I was saying, if I was now in government, I would say, yeah, now I'm going to take back what belongs rightfully to the state. So that's the comment on that. I needed to say that because I wanted to get that out of my system on the record for quite a while. On the other matters, I'm going to ask Dr. Ramos, Sasa Peters, Tando Ngoza, and Poppy Ntaka to respond to the matters. Because the whole thing, Ramos, is that does the 2018 budget refocus us to economic growth? Can you link all the questions to that? Because I think that's the thread that covers all the other members' question to it. Okay?
Okay, let me start by refocusing my response in that format. I think an honest assessment of the 2018 budget in terms of refocusing us to back to economic growth would be yes and no. I say yes because what it does is the short-term interventions that are required to stave off a recession had to do with issues of confidence and ensuring that you stave off further credit downgrades. And what 2018 budget does is it goes a long way towards addressing the fears, particularly in rating agencies, that our fiscal aggregates were running away from us. This was to do with the runaway public debt and the budget deficit that was always being postponed in terms of how we met it. So those issues, as I said, speak to short-term economic growth issues, and 2018 budget does that. But now for you to move from the short-term, which is your 1.72% economic growth, to the sustained high economic growth required, which is the long-term issue. This is where you want now to address the big structural issues that have to do with skills mismatches, innovations, and so on, entrepreneurship in the system. Those issues are longer term and are what we now need to focus on now that we have dealt with the short-term issues that were acting as an albatross on threatening us with an economic recession. So that would roughly be my couched response to, do we say 2018 budget refocuses us on economic growth? It addresses the short-term constraints to economic growth. Now, 2019 going onwards, we need to refocus now on the big structural issues to take us from a 2% or 1.7% economy to a 5% economy, and that requires other sets of measures that require time. Now, the way questions, the way that I captured them, on the value-added tax, I think, Prof, you said enough around that, and I could come in with nuances, etc. But the main issue is there's no tax that is preferable. Every tax is painful. It's the degree of pain on a tax. And also when we assess taxes, and this is the methodology that we use at the Commission, is we don't just look on the revenue-raising side, but it also has another entry, which is what you spend the money on. So it needs to be reviewed or assessed in terms of revenue-raising and the use that money is put into. So actually, the debate that we have around which tax, if you think of it in that big lens approach where you're looking at raising revenue and spending it, you'll see that it's actually artificial that we fight over should we use personal income tax or should we use a value-added tax. Ultimately, the discussion we should be having is how much and how efficiently do we want to raise this revenue? And then, through appropriations, is that money utilized in the best way because it was painful to raise it from the taxes?
And if you assess the different taxes according to their efficiency, judged in terms of just let's say we were in a business model, how efficient is this tax at raising revenue or what it is designed for? There are not many tax handles that did evaluate the tax in doing the job directly without looking at the other consequences, because ideally the other consequences is the main reason why you are raising that tax in the first place. You are raising that tax for a reason. You want to use it to address issues raised in the National Development Plan, because if you don't raise the revenue, then you don't have the money to deal with those particular issues. So when we do that more general equilibrium analysis, where we look at the revenue raising and use of the funds, and given that we wanted to plug a certain gap, we're faced with not many options on the table. The other options that were on the table, such as reducing waste, we all agree with those. But unfortunately, for somebody that is doing the budget, our colleagues in the executive, you don't budget for money that is not in the kitty. So we can talk about efficiencies, but they will say, how much and where is it? And they can't come with an appropriation bill without backing actual money behind it, which is why they had to be forced to taking decisions around a tax intervention over and above the grant changes that my colleagues will talk to. So long and short of the value of the tax, yes, it has undesirable consequences on the other side. But when you take the picture in full, it's one of your more efficient taxes. And in fact, it does quite a better job than the other tax handles that we're not discussing now because we're not on the table. But if we were to discuss them,